I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the conversation about local workforce development needs to begin long before a student reaches a job training program, a college classroom, or that first interview. It needs to begin with early childhood education. I recently hosted a live panel discussion that focused on the connection between early childhood education and development and the city's long-term workforce needs. It was produced in partnership with Leadership San Antonio Class 50. San Antonio continues to confront persistent poverty, uneven education outcomes, and a labor market that increasingly requires post-secondary training or credentials. This is a pre-recorded Source with a live audience, so we're unable to take your calls today. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
From the Malou and Carlos Alvarez Theater in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Today we're recording this special episode of The Source in partnership with Leadership San Antonio 50. And we're going to be having a vital conversation about the critical intersection of childhood education and development and the future of San Antonio's workforce. There are many economic benefits to investing in early childhood education. Boosting and supporting early childhood education and educators is a smart economic policy. That doesn't necessarily mean that this area is getting the help and resources that it demands. We're going to be talking about that today while keeping an eye on how these investments benefit the youngest learners, directly impacting economic mobility and workforce readiness. And so let's intro our panel. We're joined by Ray Saldana, President and CEO of Communities and Schools, former San Antonio City Council member. Ray, it's great to have you here.
Thank you, Dave.
Also with us, Angelique Del Olivada, the Chief Workforce Development Officer at Goodwill San Antonio. Angelique. Carol Cortez is with us, Parents as Teachers Program Manager, Good Samaritans Community Services. Carol, it's good to have you today. And also with us, Jacqueline Depew. She is with the Office of Head Start, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, but she is here today in her own personal capacity, not speaking for the services. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
So context is important. We're talking about early childhood education. There are a lot of concerns about access, affordability, staffing shortages, kindergarten readiness, and what that means when you get it right. It sets up children for success. What happens when we don't have these resources available for families? Families are struggling. They're also in crisis. So let me go down the panel. I can get each one of you to answer this question. And Ray, we'll start with you. When we say early childhood education is workforce development, what exactly do we mean?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I come at this question and also the issue from a number of different perspectives. But if I'm thinking about your audience or people who are interested in this issue, it's probably a question of what's it like to be a parent, a neighbor, a friend, or interested in what you think is the smartest investment in our community and where in that continuum, the assembly line of how we create the next generation of not only workforce, next generation of San Antonians, next generation of what creates a thriving community, you want to ask yourself, where in that continuum might there be the best place to make an investment that we know is going to have the most impact and have the greatest return? And not just in economic terms and workforce, but from what we understand, the science, the jury is out. If you understand the science of learning and development and what happens in the brain, that is a particularly important moment for the molding of many of our young people. So from a public policy standpoint, from the standpoint of economic mobility and impact, where do you create the next generation? 0 to 5 is the category, is the space where you're building out the next generation of, I come at this as a K through 12 leader and in public schools, but I also am a parent. I'm also somebody who sends my two children to the pre-K 4SA program and understand myself personally and from a policy perspective, from an economic perspective, where the best investment is around early childhood education for the kind of drivers we want to have for not just economic mobility, but opportunity and access to the American dream.
Angelique De Lovato, you're at Goodwill San Antonio. You don't do early childhood education, but you do workforce development. How do you see the connection to when we say early childhood education is workforce development? What does that mean to you?
Yes, so we work with individuals who are entering the workforce, trying to build their skills, advance their career, and improve their economic mobility. And when we talk about workforce readiness, we often talk about hard skills and soft skills. And when we talk about workforce development, it's much beyond job training. We are helping individuals build behaviors, confidence, so that they can access better opportunities. When we talk about soft skills, we hear often from employers, give us a reliable, motivated employee and we'll train the rest. Yet, when we talk about the soft skills, usually at the root of the soft skills are the executive function skills. Can a person focus? Can a person persist through challenges to complete a task? We also talk about identity. Does the person has the confidence belief in themselves to be a reliable and capable worker? And usually executive functioning, identity is built in early childhood. So in workforce development, when we are trying to prepare people to be successful in the workforce, we're trying to address gaps in skills that should have been developed much earlier. And we're seeing how hard it is to try to address it in adulthood.
Now, Carol Cortez, parents as teachers, program manager, talk about you're working with families and helping the families stabilize and work together and develop the family skills of being of working together. Do you see that as, you know, early childhood education that leads to stability and prosperity and upward mobility?
Of course. 0 to 5, like he said, it's very important. That's the we're getting them ready for the next generation going on. But at the same time, we also focus on the families. So focus on them. If they don't have the assistance they need, for example, to go to work, who's going to take care of their children? So finding a good child care that would take care of their children to help them with those skills to get them ready to go into learning those skills.
Yeah, we're going to come back. We're going to hear about your exciting program and what you do and how you work with families. It's very interesting. And so Jacqueline Depew, talk about what you do in your personal capacity about how early childhood education is workforce development.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with everything my co-panelists have said. I do have a national perspective of early childhood education and high quality early childhood education programs, but I have had the honor to work with individual organizations all across the United States and to see how high quality programs are really focused and tailored to the community needs and assessments. But one thing I have heard from a national perspective and a local perspective is that early childhood education is synonymous with childcare, and it is not. It is an investment into our future, and it's a cheaper investment to mold these young minds and give them executive functioning and the confidence to excel in life now than it will be later. I think I'm not a neurologist, or a child psychologist, but I think most of our development happens before 0 to 5, our brain development. And so when we can teach our children how to make these brain connections at a young age, their confidence will soar and they will do great in kindergarten and all the way up. It is so beautiful. I think we've all had experience with little minds in different capacities. And when you see a confident kid, there's nothing more empowering than that. And so it really starts at the earliest age as possible.
We're taking a break, a 1 minute break, and we'll be right back talking about early childhood development, education, interventions. What does this mean for economic development? It seems like these are two different spheres, but actually there's a lot of overlap. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're recording The Source in front of a live audience. San Antonio Leadership Class 50s here. The topic of the day, early childhood development, why this is an investment that not only makes sense, this is something that our future depends on. In making these investments prepares the next generation, not just for workforce, although that isn't a big part, but also stabilizing families, finding success, and actually achieving, you know, happiness, which is, I think, is what we all ought to be doing. I think when it all comes down to it, you know, the big goal should be relieving suffering everywhere that we find it, and helping families succeed, I think, is a great way to do that. But right now we are talking about early childhood development, and I'm going to go to Ray Saldana, who is the president and CEO of Communities and Schools, ask you about, I mean, what is the strongest evidence that we have that this investment pays dividends?
Yeah, well, if you believe the research that's been studied now for several decades, and there's a professor named James Heckman, I believe, out of Chicago, this would have been 2010 when I was getting turned on to the value of all of the decades of truly understanding brain development, truly understanding the continuum. We often talk about what is school age, and if I polled the audience here and I polled folks who are listening, they would think school age, well, that's, you know, 5, 6 years old when you're starting kindergarten or first grade. But the education of a young person begins from birth. And the idea of how exposed and open they are to new ideas, how their emotions are regulated based on an adult's own functioning tells you something about where we should be investing time and energy. And if you looked at the landscape across the country, looked at it here in Bexar County, it's probably the place where we invest the least amount for education prep. If you look at sometimes the education workforce or the workforce for early childhood, it's not got the same backing and support of schools of education all across the country. But the research now over the last 3 decades has pushed this to the forefront. We're talking about it here today, but across the country, they're trying to figure this out because of how clear the research is around 0 to 5 and the ability to invest what looks like a dollar into high quality training, structured early childhood education programs that are full day, and that 13-to-1 return on an investment of a dollar to significantly impact the life trajectory. And you have to think about this as a trajectory. And the best science behind this says if you invest early, it creates a lot of upstream investments and functions that solidify themselves and create a pathway of success. And I'm in the K-12 space where we often say that a student can't be turned on to learning until they're turned on to living. And living is oftentimes the hard part for our young people, their families. And so if you're not addressing the whole child and starting at that age, you're not creating the kind of escape velocity that you need for your K-12 high school graduation system, then going into career, college, high school, beyond. That has to begin somewhere. And if you're going to do it, the science is very clear on this, now going back decades, with more and more investment, we think, coming from the public sector. But it's not yet a totally, you know, functioning system. No city or state, I think, that I've gotten to visit has figured this out. The city of San Antonio, Bexar County, I think, is a long way ahead. And I think we've got a lot to show for that. But there's still much more work to be done.
Carol, at Parents for Teachers, Parents as Teachers program, at the Good Samaritan Community Services. Tell me exactly what you do, because it's really interesting about your organization and how you work directly with families, going home visits. What do you, tell us all about that. Break it down.
Yes. So Parents as Teachers is a home visiting program. We enroll families from prenatally all the way till the child is 6 years old. We go into the home as a parent educator, and we focus on the PAT model, which was we focus on the family, on the child, and also we do a parent-child interaction. So we take activities to the home where we model the activity, and then we let the parent and the child do the activity with them. And we also have group connections, which is our family nights, where we invite all of our families of our program. We meet together, Children play with the other children. One mother talks to other mother. It starts discussions within each other. But we also provide a safe space for them where they can ask us any questions or talk to within each other. And we also provide an activity during that.
And so who are these families? What are their needs?
So these families, for our program, we recruit in Bexar County. As long as they live in anywhere in San Antonio in the Bexar County, that's where they're able to enroll into our program.
Yeah, but they come. You come to them. You connect. I mean, why these families? What are they looking for? What are you looking to provide?
They're looking to find more skills, or they're questioning their skills, or some of them even tell us, we want to break generational things that we've learned back then that we now as adults see that that's not right.
So if a person, they went up, grew up in a home with, that didn't have good parenting, how do you learn how to be a parent? You know, how do you break that cycle? And parenting frequently, you know, kids don't always catch us at our best.
That is very true.
You know, we're stressed out. We're dealing with all sorts of issues. And kids know how to push our buttons in amazing ways. But you've got to figure out, you know, the skills to be a competent, nurturing, loving parent so the child understands that they are absolutely cherished and loved. So how do you teach that?
We speak to the families. I mean, there's no book that can tell us anything from that. It's just reading, knowing the families, and giving them the most information that we can to provide that for them.
And so as some parents who've gone through this program, they've gone through it multiple times because as they have more kids, they sign up. Continue.
Yes. We've had a couple of families that have stayed on. One of them is about to reach their 7 year in our program. When we do enrollment, we tell our families, we only ask for a 2 year commitment from you. After that, it's up to you if you want to stay. Awesome. If not, we totally understand. But some of them have stayed on. Either their child graduates the program and then they enroll their second child. That one graduates, they enroll the third one. So, and we love it because it's a family that we keep on having connection with the older child that graduated from our program. And we see we see so much that they've accomplished that we're like, that's awesome. We've known you since, for example, we've known you since you were a baby, and now you're doing so great in sports. So it's great to see the improvement that they've done since the beginning till they're older.
How are you funded?
We are funded by the state.
And do you think that this program, it's limited what you're able to provide, but can it be scaled up?
Oh, yes, of course. This program brings so much to the families and also to us as well as educators, because we see the need of it. We see that the families want more of it, but there's only so much that we can do as well.
And so, Jacqueline Depew, tell me what you're hearing about this program.
About Carol's program?
Yeah.
Well, I'm loving it because we always say, in my personal capacity, we say that parents and families are the child's first educator, right? And they need to be in the driver's seat throughout their life. That we see the most successful outcomes when parents are partnering with early childhood education and through school, I'm sure Ray sees, to feel empowered to be a part of their child's education. And one thing I think too, that I'm sure Carol, connecting these families to community resources, it really is a multi-generational approach, right? How can we drive the best and most successful outcomes for these children if the parents themselves are struggling? So really tackling it both from a child's perspective, but from their family as well, is super important. And so I think highly successful early childhood programs and communities really understand the needs of their communities and partner with other organizations in the community to help these families be the best that they can be.
And Ray, what did you hear about this program? What's your impression?
Well, my impression is one that I think is articulated best when we think about what works for everyone. And I think if I want what's best for my kids and I want what's best for my neighbor's children or this community, then we talk about what it looks like to create an entire village around those young people. And if we believe the trite line that is, it takes a village to raise a family or raise young kids, the question is, how's the village doing right now? And history will tell us, the last decades, the headlines will show it, there's a lot of disconnection. And there's a lot that I think is on the pressure points of families who are trying to figure this out. And the bottom line is, what does it look like to just ignore this issue if we don't connect with the kind of programs that are creating opportunities for parents to understand what does the science and the evidence tell you about what works for early child education, and whether it's around discipline or emotional regulation or the kind of diets that we know work, you can also just ignore this issue completely. And people will figure it out, but they'll figure it out in a pretty tough environment. So if the village is fractured and we don't have the kind of connection points that organizations and nonprofits are holding up, then we have the current state. And if we believe that's enough, then we'll just hopefully rely on the resilience of people to get through it, even if they're dealing with poverty or challenges, or they're one car accident away from not having enough to pay for a structured childhood education program. So when you begin to start think about this in the way of what does the village need, then you start to really, I think, ask yourself the question of what are we willing to put people through? And I believe, and I think the folks who are up here on the panel believe, that it isn't enough to just ignore this issue. It's got long tail implications beyond what we see in look, if it's a disorganized early childhood invested education system or a structured childcare, without it, that bleeds into the K-12 system. Without it, it bleeds into dropout rates. Without it, it bleeds into unemployment rates. Without it, it bleeds into the kind of issues that we see when we pick up a newspaper and read headlines about a community that is fractured. So that's what I think about programs that can be scaled with interventions, is you need to understand the kind of investments. And if you want to put that dollar in someplace, the science is clear, the evidence is clear. I think we're all around the issue. We just need to sort of shake ourselves out of this fixation we're on sometimes about when to do it and how to do it.
Just do something. Try things. You know, things work as long as we're putting in. I mean, I think that's a great program. I just love it. Angelique de Oliveira, talk about at Goodwill, you're working with adults, and these are probably heads of households trying to make it through. Help us understand, what are they dealing with in terms of childcare and trying to make it work?
Yes, so we focus on serving individuals who may face barriers to employment. So we work with a lot of individuals who may have a criminal background, a documented disability, low education attainment. But yes, life doesn't work even when doesn't stop even when you need to improve your skills, gain education credential, and improve your career situation. So a lot of our participants have family responsibilities that they are trying to manage while finding the time to invest in themselves to build a better future. And that's a lot to handle. So a lot of our work is, how do we help those individuals ensure that they have stability and resources so that they have the time to invest in themselves to build that better future? So childcare access is definitely a resource that we connect our participants to, so that they can have the peace of mind that their children are in a good place and can focus on themselves. So that's
right, but it's a struggle. I mean,
it is a struggle.
We know that just childcare, and we were trying to separate the difference between childcare and early childhood education. There is a big difference, but if you have no childcare, you're not getting anything, and it's turbulent. And not having, we're in a child care crisis. We're finding out how expensive it is. It can take 10-15% of a person's overall income in order to try and pay for child care. And we don't have enough qualified child care educators. And it is something that is completely not being addressed. We're suffering because of it.
Yes, we're seeing the challenges of our participants in trying to access childcare. We have been fortunate over the couple of years, for example, to be part of SA Ready to Work. They have done a fantastic lift in that area, that our participants are able to get access priority access into the public system for childcare services. We also work with partner organizations like United Way, their dual generation program, and other nonprofit organizations. But resources are difficult to access, and not everyone is able to find solutions. So our participants are creative. They use family members and other alternative options.
All right, so we're taking another break. If we don't have childcare, then the people who are raising our social media will end up raising children. What do you think will end up with that? Okay, we're taking another break, and we'll come back. We'll continue our conversation talking about early childhood development, education, intervention, what this means for economic development overall, why this investment makes sense, and what happens if we don't get it right. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back.
Broadway Bank, in partnership with the San Antonio Food Bank, have started their Summer Snacks for Kids campaign, providing children in low-income households with nutritious food that they lose access to during the summer. All donations go directly toward buying nutritious snacks for kids in need. Details are at broadway.bank/snacks.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're recording this special edition of The Source in front of a live audience. This is San Antonio Leadership, Leadership San Antonio, Class 50. We are live in the Malou and Carlos Alvarez Theater at the TPR headquarters downtown, having a vital conversation about the critical intersection of early childhood education and development, and also the future of San Antonio's workforce. If we don't get early education right, we're going to have a tough time meeting the challenges of the future of San Antonio. And so let's go back to our panel. Let me ask you, Jacqueline DePue, speaking in your individual capacity, although you are in the office of Head Start at the U.S. Health and Human Services. So let's talk about, you know, what are the barriers to getting this right? Why is this so difficult in order to be able to provide these resources that we know are so critically important, that they do pay off infinite dividends, and yet we're having difficulty finding the resources in order to apply in this important area?
How much time do we have? I think I have a couple answers to that question. I mean, I think one, it costs a lot of money to have a very high quality program. So funding can be a limited resource, limited factor to that. Also, we need to pay our educators more, period. It is a tough job to deal with littles and their emotions and their big feelings, and especially if they come from families or communities with trauma. And when you can make more money delivering on, you know, DoorDash than in the classroom shaping these children's minds, some people are just going to pick the easier option, right? So we really need to invest in our workforce and our teachers. And then also, I think people think that a quality education program is just teaching the ABCs, but it's so much more than that. It's teaching executive functioning, cognitive skills, having a research-based curriculum, teaching social and emotional development. All of these things are skills that we learn at a very young age that will drive us to success in later life. And for some reason, no one's found the secret sauce yet, but I hope with all the research that we have and that we're talking about it more across the nation, that we'll get there soon.
So if that doesn't happen, do kids, are they just, you have to play catch up, or they learn it wrong, or what happens?
Well, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen that really amazing graphic that's quality versus equity versus reality, right? And it's three people looking over a fence to the opportunities, and they're all different heights. And so when we talk about equality, we're giving them all the same box to stand on, but still you can't see over the fence. But equity and having equitable opportunities is when you give people a box to stand on so they can all see over the fence. And maybe the person who is tall enough to begin with already doesn't need a box. we don't think about it in an equitable way, what's going to happen is the opportunity gap is just going to widen. And the reality is that if we're not pouring into equity and giving people the opportunity to start their education at a young age, the person who's too short to see over the fence is now going to be standing in a ditch, because the person who can see over the fence is going to be getting all of the resources while we didn't give an opportunity for the little guy to see over the fence. And it's a really powerful image. My explanation of it is not as powerful as Google image it later, okay? But it's true. If we don't invest today, the future will be bleak tomorrow. And I really think that starts at the earliest age.
Multi-generational trauma, it's a real thing. Poverty is trauma. Also, when you have substance abuse in the home, domestic abuse in the home, these are all real things that are happening in epidemic level here in Bexar County, across Texas. Trying to address these with children, they're looking for a safe place. And when they finally feel safe, their mind opens up, their brain opens up, and it becomes a sponge, and they learn so much. So let me ask you about that, Carol Cortez, at parents, as teachers, how to go into a home where there's probably been some disturbances and trying to bring healing into that home. And do you train your caseworkers to do that? How do they do that? What can we learn from that?
So yes, so we do assessments with the families. So we do a relationship assessment tool right when we go into the home, and we do it without the partner, and we kind of see where they're at that moment. If we see that they're scoring higher than 10, that's when we start bringing in materials, trying to figure out what we can do to help the situation, but also make the mom also see what is going on. Is this the safest environment that you want to be with your child? But then again, if they want to do counseling or they want to do anything, the lines are extremely long for them to even do that. And if they are wanting to do that, you're now asking, do I pay for counseling for $10 or $20? Or can I use those $20 for gas? Right now, gas is at $3.49, $4. If they don't have gas, they can't move around. So a lot of these families stay in this situation because it's expensive to even look for out even resources. Even the resources that are free at the moment, super long wait, long line. And if we do refer them, we refer them to a university that do free counseling. But even at that, that's still already taken up. So we try to take into the home as much as we can for resources, but it's up to the family, but also it's up to the organizations too, if they even have the availability for the parents to even go there too.
Ray Saldana, what lessons did you learn from your time on City Council when it comes to shaping early childhood education? Anyone following City Council today will look, it seems like a romper room, so it probably overlaps a lot. But, you know, you've had a view of San Antonio representing families, people in need, coming to you, asking for help. You know, how did that inform you about early childhood education?
Well, one of the most satisfying feelings you can have as somebody who served in elected office, getting to represent, you know, hundreds and thousands of voices and people in a community like San Antonio, is to really hone in on what are the deepest challenges that people will really feel, and then what can you do to actually focus on solving and finding some solutions for that. The issue around early childhood education began to get so much momentum and steam. This would have been 2012, 13. I remember when we went out and started to describe early childhood education and in a way that wasn't in people's minds. This wasn't about daycare. And that was a really important revealing moment, that this community really understands the value of that time and in young person's life. They knew the challenges of how difficult it was to find, you know, a full day option. You know, if we talk about the connection to economic mobility, there are parents today who elect not to go into the workforce because not having to pay for childcare today or full day early childhood education or pre-K program is less expensive than just staying home and taking care of their children. And so the cost for that, we figured, is that so many people were resonating on this issue that early childhood education, we said, why don't we actually put it to a vote and see if folks are that interested that they'll actually increase a tax, in this case a sales tax, to fund the concept of early childhood education through the pre-K program. That was over 10 years ago, and there's now more evidence about that kind of impact. And what that tells me is that you often want to find out what is a problem that folks are actually having, and not just something that you want to say because it sounds good and it becomes a sort of description that you can hang your hat on when you're running for a campaign. It's real issues for real people, and that one is a real issue for people in San Antonio and across the country, that you're seeing more and more cities, states take advantage of this issue. And one of the things that I now do is I'm a board member of Early Matters. It's a local advocacy effort here to really solve the question, or to solve the problem in a very structured way, to think about what is a goal that we're actually trying to attack around this issue of early childhood education, structured care from 0 to 5. Well, the first thing you need to do is do a landscape analysis. What are the services now? What are the quality, and what's the quality of those services? How many students or how many young people are not in any structured care? So that begins to describe the painted picture of the future that you want to create. And Early Matters is thinking about this not just as a local initiative, but what's the state's role? What's the Texas legislature's role in supporting this? Not just because the science is true, though it is, not just because it's an issue that the community cares about, though that is true, but what's the economic connection and the return on investment for the legislated dollars from the state that'll help support an issue that on so many fronts is a winning issue. And we think that's critically important in this longer.
I mean, you laid out the science, you laid out the math, you talked about how this is proven. This is not a freebie giveaway program. This is something that actually improves quality of life for everyone in society if we apply the money that we do have in the state of Texas. So talk about, you know, why isn't that happening? Ray, tell us why things are broken.
I mean, there is some reason to feel optimism here. There's not a lot of issues on the table that are nonpartisan, that there's always an angle that you could look at something and say, maybe one party can take this and turn it into, you know, a twisted villain. But not in the case of children, not in the case of early childhood education. The indicators are so clear. So the reason I say I feel some optimism, you know, as a member of the Early Matters Board, we begin to see what actually might have some traction in the next legislative session, where we see enough legislators from across the aisle say, I'll put my hand in the middle on this issue because the science is clear. It's because I'm hearing about it from my constituents, and it's a real issue. The amount of money for childcare is not something that that hits right in your pocketbook and makes a big difference. So that's
and
what
then
I feel
we frame it as this is economic development, then that becomes even more nonpartisan.
And I'll do just one more in a quick second, if we have it.
You have like a quick second.
I don't have a quick second.
Okay, we'll get back to that. All right, we got to take this break. We got to hit our breaks. We'll continue our conversation about early childhood development, education, intervention, helping families thrive in San Antonio. Leadership San Antonio is with us, and we're going to come back from break with their questions. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies having a vital conversation with Leadership San Antonio Class 50. Future San Antonio depends on how well we take care of our children today, giving them early access to education. And we're talking about their earliest days, not in kindergarten, not in middle school, high school. We got to start right away, and there are people working on that here in San Antonio. We're talking about that today. Ray Saldana, we cut you off, and you wanted to make a point.
Yeah, I think I've heard some of the panelists talk about this, but there's an important question that we often ask ourselves as a community, which is this a place, call it San Antonio, call it Bexar County, where we have access to opportunity? And the reason I bring it up is because I remember being on the city council in 2011 and 12, and there was a researcher that not many people knew about who was talking about this issue named Raj Chetty, who was an economist. And from his standpoint, he wanted to ask a question with a particular answer in mind, which is the American dream still alive? And if it is, where is it most accessible and possible? And he looked at a map of the entire country, and he put that out and made it public. And it was the first time as an elected official anybody could access this map and see that San Antonio was way behind, sort of, you know, 48 out of 50 or 47 out of 50 around opportunity. And the question was very simple. Are you on a path to make more than your parents did by the age of 27? And so the way that you would think about that is, you know, if you were born in the 60s, 70s, that was sort of a 90% chance, 80% chance that you would be doing better economically than your parents. Now, in the years I was born in the 80s, others who were born in the 90s, 2000s, that's a coin flip. And we know in many ways what works because the researchers and the economists who have studied this say, is it around housing and where you grew up? Is it around investments in public education? And there's a strong case for each of those. But one of the strongest cases to still drive access to the American dream and access to opportunity is investing in early childhood education. And the way to get behind that is creating a kind of system where you have fully staffed, well-paid, sustainable educators who are working on the most precious age at 0 to 5. And we've actually seen this happen. In 2021 and 22, when pandemic dollars were flowing freely from the federal government, you saw the workforce problem that we have today solved in that we were actually paying folks who are working, whether it was in structured childcare, early childhood development programs, getting paid and them staying. So there's ways that we can see a future here, which is why, again, I feel excited about this issue that is nonpartisan, that people can get behind, where the return on investment is clear.
All right, let's go to a question from our class. And go ahead, say your name and what's your question?
Hi, I'm Melanie Mendez-Gonzalez. I appreciate this conversation so much, even though my children now are 16 and 19. But when they were little, they were too old to get into pre-K for SA. But I'm thinking about myself back then, so the mom today that has the littles or is about to have the littles. And I'm even thinking about the people who love the mom or love the parents with the littles. What questions do they need to be asking themselves? Or what can they do today? Because I feel like this is a great conversation, but a lot of it is about the investment for the future. But people who are listening are like, what can I do today?
Okay. Let's go straight first to Jacqueline Depew about that. And can you answer like an immediate need? It's crisis. We have an immediate need.
Yeah.
What do you think we ought to say about that?
Well, I think that goal setting with a family is so important. I think that while high quality programs can be tailored to community needs, they also need to be tailored to the individual child and the individual family. So simply having a conversation at enrollment saying, what are your goals for your family, for yourself, and for your child? I think that's a very simple question with a very impactful answer that can shape the course of the child's experience in the program and also for the family as well.
How do we take care of each other? You know, that's basically, who do we have as a support system? How do we find people who that we can lean on in these times? And I don't know, Goodwill, you're out there, you're helping people as you can. How do we build community?
Yes, and that was going to be my angle to your question. I think while there are gaps in access, there are also a lot of programs and resources out there. So if I'm a mother of 3 young children under 6, you have to go and look for the resources and the programs and don't give up. And yes, it's about finding people around you who can support you as well as those programs and resources.
Any other questions? All right, let's bring a microphone.
My name is Adrienne Jackson. My question is, we've heard a lot about the importance of early education, and I think we all really understand that, and the word crisis is being thrown around. Who are the entities that are against this funding, and what organized effort are they making to inhibit our ability to get in those funds?
All right.
I don't think there is anyone who is against early childhood education. I think there are a lot of conflicting needs. So if we look at workforce development, there is a huge need. 1 in 7 adults don't have a high school diploma. Many more don't have the credentials to find quality work. So do you invest in early childhood? Do you invest in workforce development? There are so many areas that need assistance. So I think it's more of a priority, and the extent of the funding is so significant, and finding the right business model so those entities can be sustainable. And I think is a critical part of addressing the gap, is that those entities needs to be business-wise sustainable.
There's an active effort in the state of Texas to defund public education. Look at those people, and that's your answer. Okay, anyone else want to stick their neck out?
Well, I just got to say one thing, which is, it would be easier if there was a villain in this story around early child education, because then you would know what resistance you could fight against. But the bigger issue here is both indifference and apathy, that there is not, we have a tolerance for other people's pain and struggle, where if you ignore this issue, none of it bubbles up to the pain of you feeling it in a way that you're a decision maker, you're a policy maker. And because there's some indifference, you're trying to fight against that and creating some advocacy and some momentum. That's why the folks who've been studying this for decades have said, it's so clear. Why can't, it's a question of them getting over that hump of indifference, that there are so many other priorities, which valuable in all senses. But now the question is, if they're all valuable, can you prioritize? And can you prioritize in a way with really significant upstream and downstream effects? And that's what it is. It's just indifference. And I think we're getting to the point where it's becoming a more important issue to legislators, to parents, to voters, but less of a villain on the other side who's fighting or defending against this.
All right, sir.
Hey, thank you for being here. Valentino Lucio. We see the success of pre-K for SA. Are there any other models in other cities across the nation or across the world that we can pull from to ensure continued success?
Let's go to Ray. He knows. You don't know.
Well, in my personal capacity, I think that one model that is a gold standard is the Head Start model. It really focuses on the whole child and the family. And I think a lot of organizations that don't have Head Start funding have even modeled their programs around that. Focuses not only on learning, but also social emotional development, health and nutrition, connecting, making sure that medical, dental, mental health for these kids and families is a priority as well. At least that's what I've read about in my personal capacity. But a lot of states have actually also for their universal pre-K have modeled a lot of their classrooms a Head Start model. And Head Start actually just celebrated their 60th birthday last year. So this month is its 61st birthday. So it's been true and tested. Yeah, it's a pretty impressive program.
And we have another question. Yes, hi.
Hi, my name is Barbara Warren. I'm a mother of three under six as well. And I realize that my children spend more time with their teachers than at home most of the time. And I value teachers tremendously. So my question to you all is, how do we advocate for better pay for teachers? Because I think it's one of the hardest jobs there is out there.
Advocating for more pay and more societal respect for teachers. How do we do that? Okay, Ray, you can't back away from this one.
I'll take a shot at this one, because for 2 to 3 years after the city council, what I did is dedicate myself to a small foundation called Raise Your Hand Texas, who cared a lot about this issue of public education in the state of Texas, and particularly what we were doing to fall behind so many other states. But the driving force about why we wanted more resources in the pot of funding going through K-12 is because we were seeing such a significant departure of high quality teachers. And when you would find just quality teachers, the question would be, what happens with the quality teachers, and are they going to those Title I schools where there's concentrations of poverty? So are your best teachers teaching in the places of highest need? that's a way that we think about sort of education, but we also extend the education title beyond just K through 12. It's 0 to 5, and making sure those educators, because that's what they are truly being credentialed, certified, and supported to stay in a workforce that's sustainable. And as was described, what does it look like economically if you today have to put food on the table, gas in your tank, and taking on a role as an early childhood specialist is not yet seen at that same level. So we have to think about educators from that full spectrum, from 0 to 12th grade, and advocating at the state level has been, again, we've talked about what are kind of the issues that I've seen in the state of Texas that have had some nonpartisan or bipartisan support. Education in general, but teachers can fill a room. Teachers can fill the Capitol in a way that has been incredibly powerful for advocacy. And we haven't, I think, gotten full force in that pressure campaign to really identify how we get behind teachers. But I do think there's some strong advocacy organizations, whether it's Raise Your Hand Texas and others, who believe in this effort. And as Dave described, there is sometimes a villain on that, on the other side of this, about a sort of defunding of public education or backtracking on a commitment we're making to K through 12 public education right now that makes it clear that this is a fight we can't sit out.
Well, that wraps up our time that we have here. And I want to thank our incredible panel for being with us today. Ray Saldana, President and CEO, Communities in Schools, a former city council member here in San Antonio. Angelique de Oliveira, the Chief Workforce Development Officer at Goodwill San Antonio. Carol Cortez, Parents as Teachers Program Manager at Good Samaritan Community Services. Jacqueline DePew, in her personal capacity with us, Office of Head Start, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Great to have all of you with us today. Let's give them a round of applause. This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.